Chapter 23. The Watcher. The ground was already shaking by the time the drones reacted. They all moved together like water. It reminded Udo of a discussion he once held with a snake on the side of a mountain. Then she grabbed his hand and was pulling him along hard enough that his feet left the ground. He trailed after her like a banner, twisting around as he tried to see everything at once. He noted how the drones all pooled on the far side of the cave like silver water swirling over a drain. Looking overhead, Udo saw in their combined light that the cavern walls had gone blurry, as though his vision was failing. He realized that blurriness was dust being shivered from the rock face.
"Ing! Ing, what is happening?" he shouted.
"We are found. He has found us. We must flee."
"He?"
Udo rolled his body around to look backward to the dark side of the cave. He saw bits of rock debris burst loose and tumble tiredly down the side, so slow and gentle. He could have counted off the seconds between each bounce. One of those settled to rest in the hollow they'd lately occupied, and then his mind truly saw what was happening. The boulder had been as large as an ox. Something was coming through the wall. Something enormous. Udo snarled, "Oh, fuck me," and rolled over so that he faced the floor. Then he contracted with every muscle he knew how to use, pulled his feet downward, touched the ground, and bounced immediately at Irpisha's forward tug.
"Let me down," he shouted. "I can move faster if you let me down."
"You won't dart away?"
"From you? What am I, insane? Please let me down, we'll both move faster."
She pointed at the mass of shining silver bodies convulsing against the wall they approached, many rooting away but rapidly nearing, and yelled,
"Make for their center!"
Then she threw him forward like a shot stone. He began to tumble as soon as she'd released his wrist. His instincts took over, and he tried to move his body to absorb the rotation. Realized an instant later it was a hopeless gesture. She'd hurled him with such force that there was nothing to do but tumble. Surrendering to the fall, Udo pulled his arms and legs close to his body, now spinning faster, now dazzled by the flashing oscillation of that world. Dark light, dark light, dark light, and the heady sensation of falling, always falling. He focused his will upon what he saw, bent all of his concentration around understanding what his eyes conveyed. He forgot to notice that all sound had left his world when she'd released him. For Udo, there was only the shifting pattern. Dark light, dark light, dark light, dark light, dark light, dark light. He sensed the ground coming near, or he was falling near to the ground. Udo breathed, closed his eyes. Within his being, something told him when the time was right. This did not surprise him. What surprised him was that he knew that small voice would be there. He threw his legs and arms out into a wide cross as if his body was being broken upon the Richter's wheel. His tumble immediately slowed, and then there was the ground right below him. All he had to do was take the surface in his hands and pull. He did. Now surging forward, now galloping, now destroying the distance with his limbs. He flew in that place as he'd never flown before, and he knew the act truly for what it was. He was indeed flying as though carried on Thunayr's own breath. The cave face beneath him was there only for changes in direction. He required it to turn or to go faster or to slow down. Otherwise, he simply flew like a sparrow hawk, as naturally as breathing. The sounds of the underworld returned when he grabbed with his hands or kicked with his feet, a growing, grinding thrum that reminded him of a well-kindled pyre. He sensed it behind him and thought of Irpisha. He felt her presence between his shoulder blades like the soft press of a fingertip. On the following bound, he swung his head downward so that he saw behind, or perhaps below himself. There she was, upside down and galloping after him in similar fashion, yet further back than he would have liked. Behind her, Udo saw the rock wall explode into a shower of debris that flew across the cavern and rebounded from the sides. More pieces broke away from these impact sites until the entire space became choked with dust and darting rock. He came to a stop and turned back. Opposite his position, a hole had appeared at the center of the explosion and darkness was pouring in around the edges, rippling along the sheer face like quickened oil. Between himself and that darkness, Irpisha fled alone. She noticed him soon after he'd begun to gallop toward her. She waved a hand frantically overhead and said,
"No, go back, I'm all right."
He heard her cry as if they shared the same melam. He ignored her command. As he closed with her, he shouted,
"After all the time I've spent seeking after you, you must think I'm mad. Now leap with me."
He looped his arm through hers and sprang back toward the writhing pool of drones without bothering to confirm if she understood. And confirmation was indeed unnecessary. She intuited his meaning and timed the explosion of her own powerful legs against his. They flew arm in arm, twin missiles skimming along the ground, slapping a staccato beat along the surface with 2 hands and 4 feet. He had never in his life moved with such ferocity, and despite the dread he felt seeping in behind them, he stifled laughter. He wasn't even short of breath. As they neared their target, Udo stole another backward glance. What he saw killed the laughter as though crushed from his body with stones. The dark mass was spreading out, consuming the entire cavern in a rapidly advancing scum. Something within his mind shifted. Perspective, perhaps? Or maybe just the freefall confounding his balance again. Now they were suspended over a cauldron, and the murky, pulsating oil surged upward to drown them. At the edges of the mass, he saw small globs breaking apart, moving faster as they spread away from the hole. Udo strained his eyes and saw the smoke ripple undulation of their movement, like distant heat shimmers. He recognized them.
"Dvergars!" he screamed. "We'll be buried alive in Dvergars!"
"Keep climbing," Irpisha shouted. "Don't look back, just climb."
And so they did, galloping like chargers up the incline of the wall. They were now close enough to the drones that Udo could make out individual limbs. They were no longer a lake of silver vibration. Despite her command, he began to pull back. When she looked to see what held him, he shook his head and pointed at them.
"We'll be cut to pieces in that. They're blades. They're climbing all over each other."
She shook her head and pulled harder against him, causing his restored shoulder to sing.
"They will move," she yelled. "Hurry. He's not far behind."
"He?
Lelwani. Lel."
He looked back again. He thought the black mass was moving faster now. They'd covered more than half the distance to their side of the cavern already. As he watched, there was a sudden eruption at the center of their mass. Singular bodies flew through empty space like pinprick tears in reality. Little windows into the outer chaos, swirling like gadflies. From the unknown center shot 4 grasping whips, the tentacles of the Watcher, severed appendages blindly flailing. They smashed and dragged against the cavern walls, dislodging Dvergars by the hundreds and blowing them into the open spaces like burnt pollen. Where they impacted the walls, boulders burst forth and tumbled, rebounded, tumbled again, and destroyed all in their path.
"Too late," she shouted.
She yanked again, but now Udo could no longer feel the pain of his shoulder. He could feel nothing at all. He saw only the grasping arms of the Watcher, writhing and pulsating in their search. Udo forgot everything watching those probes do their blind, stupid work. Forgot to be afraid, forgot to flee, forgot the presence of his long-sought goddess, forgot even that he was Udo. Something grabbed him by the jaw and pulled him away from the sight. His eyes strained upon that hideous beast until only the whites were visible. Then his hands were enclosed within her own, and she was bellowing his name, and he was back. He was Udo again, and his heart was immediately battering against the walls of his chest as though desperate for escape.
"What?"
he gasped.
"Do not listen," she commanded.
Hands now trembling, legs and body and bowels quivering like those of a crone, he nodded. A flash of silver off to the side distracted him. He looked and saw Triangle. The drone stood alone a few paces off, hollow eyes like pits staring coldly upon his doom.
"We will hold them," said the drone.
When he lifted his bladed hand, the mass of writhing silver at his back parted. Looking along that path, Udo saw a tunnel buried into the rock. Then Triangle turned his head to Udo, absent eyes, white mask, symbology etched into the surface. Those markings could have meant anything at all, though to their owner, Udo was sure they meant everything. He said,
"Stay alive."
then looked again upon the advancing wave. As Udo watched, the drone's body rippled and blurred. There was a shimmer, then the brightness died away. Only a smoky black emptiness remained, a hole in time, indefinite and unknowable, and then it was surging toward the swelling wine-dark ocean, a singular arrow loosed upon a horde. Udo looked on aghast as Triangle flitted across the cavern floor, juking and zagging in irregular patterns, sometimes disappearing in shadow only to reappear several rooten further along, rushing headlong toward that indomitable wall until Udo could no longer see him against the greater backdrop of emptiness. Then he saw a pinprick flash that was whiter than white. It was dazzling. He blinked several times after and saw the image yet imprinted upon his eyelids. The brightness shot upward from the floor like a lance of fire, impacted the black wave's leading edge, and exploded in a shower of rock and debris and tumbling shapeless pieces of matter that shuddered between darkened light like flickering candles of blue fire. A hole was torn open where he'd impacted, exposing the rock beneath, only to be filled a few seconds later with the infalling collapse of the Dvergaz. More drones surged forward from all sides. They tore along the walls of the cavern in a silver wave to answer the oily murk bearing down upon them all. It was like water composed of pure light raining down in sheets upon chaos itself. And as they neared, they all shimmered out of reality as if encased in smoke. When the two masses met, Udo was deafened by a roar the likes of which he'd never experienced. It made the battles he'd endured sound paltry by comparison. A baby's wail stood against a charging bear. He clapped his hands over his ears on instinct, though the gesture was useless. It felt like knives had been thrust into the canals. Far ahead, the Watcher's tentacles smashed indiscriminately among the mass, filling the space with such debris as to hide it all away from view. Then, only the roaring remained. It filled him to the brim until Udo was erased, and only the sounds of hell's fury remained. He shut his eyes and screamed mutely. He could not hear himself. He felt only the tearing within his throat. Then he was falling again. Somewhere far away, he was falling endlessly and no longer cared. His senses must have returned shortly after. When he was again himself, they still plummeted through the tunnel together. She was dragging him by the arm, his body gently drifting, sometimes colliding sharply with the jagged wall. He could still hear the pounding somewhere far off, the low, hungry thrum of pulverized rock and splintered bodies. These sounds reached him in between the dry and ragged gasps of his savior. He listened to her breathe.
"You're back now," she panted.
"You're breathing heavy," he said.
"You are heavy."
Of course he wasn't, not in that place. He couldn't tell if the answer had been made in jest or frustration, but under the circumstances, he suspected either was possible.
"I'm sorry," he said, struggling to reach the tunnel wall with his hands. "I'm well now. Let me down. I can do it."
"Fast," she warned. "He is still coming."
Despite the urgent need to unburden her of himself, Udo first looked back the way they'd come. He saw only the tunnel, which disappeared into darkness not far behind them. He shook his head, turned, and reached for the rock. She sensed when he was ready and swung his body toward it. Then he was free. He grabbed hold of the tunnel wall and was shocked at how much louder the sounds of battle suddenly became. It echoed within his mind, rattling him. It sounded as though they were consumed within the very center of it.
"By Godon, but they sound close," he yelled.
"Not as close as you might fear, but not as far as we would like. The sound comes to us through the rock. It does strange things."
"I've learned as much," he said.
"Please,
save your breath for the climb.
We're nearly there."
Then she was silent, save for the great sucking gasps that he could hear almost within his own mind. The sound imparted a rhythm upon him. He realized the swing of his arms and the thrust of his legs were now governed by the time of her breathing. She inhaled, he kicked forward and threw his arms wide. She exhaled, he took the rock in his hands and scooped downward, like a hawk digging away at the sky on a rapid climb. Pretty soon he realized he was outpacing her again and slowed his pace. As they fled, he struggled to ignore the explosive din clawing along the insides of his skull. It was unlike any sound of war he'd heard before. No screaming of men, nor the ring of steel. It came with an intimate closeness, as if the pulverization of the cavern and the deaths of the many drones that must accompany it were a caress that slithered along his spine. That touch was cold to him. It was Hell's own sharp-tipped finger dragging a furrow through his flesh. When he could no longer resist, he looked back again. The eyes of the godskin showed him some of their immediate area, but the darkness of that place must have been profound. Even Irpisha, who labored right next to him, was visible only by half. The special hearing he'd been granted, which now felt as natural to him as the use of his ears, supplemented what his eyes failed to see, exposing the tunnel as it stretched further away in flashing diaphanous quivers of smoke. It looked to Udo as though a fine layer of mist clung to the walls. It blurred with the roar of far-off battle. There was movement. At first, he was unsure. The powers granted by the Melam enhanced his senses in miraculous ways, but there were hard boundaries. In order for him to truly see, there had to exist at least a modicum of light somewhere close. To hear, he had to make physical contact. Whatever it was behind them, far back in the depths of that tunnel, it seemed the godskin strained against its own limitations to bring him even a shred of useful information.
"You're slowing," Irpisha hissed. "We must move faster."
He looked ahead and renewed his pace, blinking his eyes many times. It felt as though wet fingertips had been touching lightly against their surface, not quite grasping. He loped along with her a while longer, doing what he could to ignore the feeling closing in behind him, that coldness upon his back, the tingling in the soles of his feet. Udo looked back again. The darkness behind them now churned like a cauldron. He realized there was something behind that bubbling, watery movement. Someone or something had cast a black oilcloth over reality itself, and whatever had been hidden under it wanted out. He blinked, slowed again, ignored Irpisha's angry cry. He looked. The rock tunnel spiraled below him like the gullet of some serpent, frothing pit of chaos warping the hollow center. As he watched, small clusters of black hooks emerged from the edges and bit into the walls like grasping fingers. They pulled, dragging the darkness closer to him, even as those hooks disappeared again under the advancing wave. The darkness itself was chasing after them, he realized, hauled forward on the leading edge of perhaps several hundred bladed fingers.
"It's the Dvergos," he shouted. "They're on us. We have to move."
He'd looked ahead, only to find Irpisha was now gone. The words he'd meant to say died even as his strength died. His last few bounds along the tunnel were sickly lurches made on jellied limbs. He was alone. He was alone and had nowhere to go. Now he was drifting, bouncing gently from the walls. He realized he couldn't stand not to see and turned back to watch it coming for him, and indeed, it still came. The churning black had halved the distance. Udo whimpered, pressed his hands backward into the wall, and began kicking away with numb legs, feet glancing off the rough surface. He watched the hooks piercing through and submerging back into the darkness and wondered if he would scream. He wondered if there would be time to scream, and if screaming would lessen the pain. Then a hand seized him around the left arm, and he did scream. It pulled him sidewise into the tunnel wall. Only there was no wall. He now plummeted into a side passage, dragged again just as he'd been before.
"Do you think you can keep up now?" she gasped.
"I'm sorry," he yelled.
She heaved him forward, and he landed mid-gallop, surging ahead on renewed energy and not bothering to see if she could keep up. He suspected she would. They drove together along this new path, their gasps rendered silent by the persistent lowing moan that followed behind. It reminded Udo of dunking his head into a rushing river. It was like a hive of bees had been turned loose in his skull. It made his eyes water and his nose run, as if the vibrations could somehow cause his body to leak.
"Ahead," she said. "Almost there."
"What?" I see nothing.
Almost there, she repeated. Almost there. Almost there.
He realized she was speaking to herself. She was speaking to give herself strength, perhaps courage. It was not a revelation he enjoyed. Then she grabbed his arm and drew him up short. He did not protest or question. He felt their survival now depended on immediate obedience to her commands. She led him further along at a reduced speed, one hand probing gently ahead. A few moments later, it contacted something solid, and they had to stop. Udo closed his eyes and breathed deeply, fighting to ignore the sounds coming up behind them. They were growing forever louder. He sensed, rather than felt, light and opened his eyes. And there was light. He'd not realized how absent it had been until that moment. That small glimmer, cradled in the palm of her hand as if a tiny dish danced there, only lit a small portion of the tunnel, yet it was blinding. He winced, held up a hand to shield his eyes. Then, looking between his fingers, he realized there was a door set into the wall. It reminded him of a much smaller version of the door between Erda and Talam. A perfect white, unmetal, bubbled like snakeskin. She passed her hands over it, fingers gently touching along the surface. It disappeared into the tunnel wall, and she dragged him through before he fully realized what had happened. Now they were in another tunnel, yet this one was massive where before they'd labored through a constrictive pipe. It sank deeper below them, appearing to narrow as it fell away. He looked overhead, where it widened into a vast open space. He saw a soft blue glow ringing the edge somewhere up there. Dangling from the wall by one hand, body drifting, he sighed,
"We're here. We're in the funnel."
He was startled by a basso clang felt through his entire skeleton. Udo glanced toward the tunnel from which they'd emerged an instant later and saw only a sheer wall. It mesmerized him. He put his hand against the surface as if he suspected it was an illusion. He felt only cold, solid rock. Then, still holding it there, he felt a shiver in his palm. Then stillness. Stillness, he thought, remembering wildly how the Walhazians used to urge each other to silence. Then, scraping. He put his other hand against the rock and closed his eyes. The scraping intensified. He could almost see them clawing away on the other side.
"It won't hold them long," she said,
voice now calm. It sounded as though she had regained her breath as soon as they'd stopped running.
"They'll either come through or find a way to come around."
"Where?" he gulped.
He was still fighting against his own shortness of breath. She looked downward. He followed her gaze. Another pit in a hell composed of nothing but pits, large enough in diameter that he could have dropped his entire village down the center and never scrape a side. Thoughts of his old village brought thoughts of the people who lived there unbidden to his mind. He saw Nyx floating lifeless in a tank and shook his head violently.
"Come,"
she called, already diving down into the murk.
"Time to leave."
"Yes," he whispered. "Yes. I'll follow."
Udo turned his heels toward hell, spread his arms, and flew.